You are now entering Zone 4. Please be seated and prepare to experience the nerd aristocracy. Any offences encountered by today's broadcast will not be the responsibility of the Mars Civex Consolidated Drilling Corporation or its subsidiaries.
Welcome to the Nerd Aristocracy, the podcast for all things nerd. Available worldwide at nerdaristocracy.com.
And now,
the leaders of the nerd proletariat, your esteemed hosts, Jonathan Bell and Ryan Reinecke.
What is going on, proletariat? Welcome to this episode 43 of the Nerd Aristocracy podcast.
Man, you almost got out of that hole.
I did. It was because we were doing tongue twisters before the show. I firmly believe that was the reason.
Those were blowjobs.
Okay. Well, you know, whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah, we're doing old.
You say tomato, I say blowjob. Right.
Old theater trick. Unique New York. New York is unique. You know, you need unique New York.
Yes.
You really want to piss off a room full of people, just do that like 800 times.
I don't even think it would take 800. I think by the second or third time, I'd be ready to slap whoever was saying it if it was...
Yeah, the 800 is like you're tempting fate there. And the other one's red leather, yellow leather.
Okay.
Which is that is a total bitch twister right there.
Yes. Fair enough. Now that we've discussed that and I butchered the name of our actual show, how's your week been?
Good, good. All right. I've moved at work. I used to be at a desk, and I would have customers come in that needed and detailing.
Now you're on the corner?
The rigs. Now I'm in a cubicle.
Okay.
And I just have an interior disdain for the concept of cubicles, I guess.
Yes.
And it's not bad. I mean, it's relatively low maintenance. In many ways, it's better than where I was.
Right.
The coworker that I was near before liked to a lot about like personal stuff and things I didn't care about. And I'm polite, but I'm also like can be really cold at times.
Sure.
But I felt the social obligation to be like, huh, what?
Right.
And it was just like throwing a brick through my plate glass concentration of graphic design. You know, graphic design, when you're hacking something out, doesn't really lend itself to carrying on a, you know, conversation with somebody.
So I would agree with that.
Now I'm over by like the IT fellas.
Okay.
Which, if there's small talk to be made, Game of Thrones is a subject that might come up.
Very nice. Yes. Very nice.
So that's total upgrade.
So have you turned them on to the Nerd Aristocracy podcast?
Not yet. I'm waiting.
You're feeling them out to see if they're cool because sometimes you talk about work.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Fair enough.
But at the same time, like, I want to make sure they will take a recommendation of mine. Like, let them know me enough to mention it rather than mention it and they're like, oh, I don't know who this douchebag is.
Yeah.
And then, like, hey, did you ever check out that thing? Instead of, like, you know, months into, like, wow, you're a god.
And yes.
Like, yes, well, by the way, I also, they're yes. Aristocracy.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're getting there.
Okay. Fair enough.
And they're all dickheads.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. As co-workers normally tend to be.
Yeah. No, actually, they're cool. I'm trying to angle my way into asking for a raise in the future. And the CEO is a good fellow, very, very jovial guy. He was in a medieval movie, he'd be like a king gorged with turkey legs.
I thought you were going to say like the
to perform for him,
like the drunk friar or something.
Mm. Drunk friar played by Mickey Rooney,
right?
But he doesn't drink.
Okay,
so just naturally that way.
All right, yeah, that's typically called Percocet.
Yeah, talk about that.
But anyway, well, that's something.
Yeah,
something.
How's your week been?
It's been all right. Went to New Orleans the past weekend and watched some football. And enjoyed that. That was good.
You went to a game?
I did go to a game.
How'd our boys in black and gold do?
They did pretty well. They won and kind of scared me there at the beginning of the second half, but made it out alive, so that's cool. Been I finally got the episode 42 up and running, the coupon, extreme couponing. Extreme. So if anybody's listening to this and you have not listened to the couponing episode, I'm very proud of that episode because I think we gave a lot of good tips and hints to help the proletariat save money.
Mm-hmm. So, like my 30,000 coupon redemption with Kraft.
Yes, and ones that are slightly less
insane.
Occupational.
Good point. Yeah, and that's some of the best podcast episode artwork I've done in Photoshop for some time. I'm very proud of myself.
For a while, I mean, I literally stared at it for like 10 minutes and was like, did he make this or did he just pull this off Google Images after searching for coupon art or art of coupons?
No, I was just going for the essence of extreme couponing. And I think pulling on some of the aesthetic tendencies of the work environment I'm in right now.
Yes.
The whole, like, proud Southern soul of extreme couponing.
Sure. Rah. Yes. Yeah, it was. It hit the nail on the head. It was very. If it was an interpretive dance, it would have been dead on.
I'm gonna put it in the gallery one day.
You should. You should. So I heard, and anyway, I mentioned the couponing from last episode because I wanted to kind of explain that I've had an epiphany this week as to how to go about my own coupon experience.
Okay. And take us on your journey, on your path.
Currently in our region, there are two places that double coupons, as I mentioned last week. There's Food Giant that doubles any coupon up to 50 cents face value, meaning if the coupon is 50 cents, they'll double it to a dollar. It's 25 cents, they'll double it to 50 cents. But if it's
60 cents,
if it's 60 cents, you just get 60 cents off.
They won't bring it up to a dollar?
No.
Oh, that's kind of balls.
Yes. Huh. But anywho, so Food Giant doubles every day of the week up to 50 cents. Fred's Dollar Store doubles only on Saturdays up to 70 cents.
Now, Fred's is a regional store for our international listeners, right? Or for our national listeners.
Yeah, I don't know if Fred's is all over the country or not.
How would you best describe them? Kind of like a...
Dollar General.
Okay, what if there's
a like family dollar?
You go there and you get like plastic bags, trash bags, Lysol.
Yes, they have a small grocery section. I'm sure people are familiar with the dollar store concept. But so Fred's... only on Saturdays, doubles up to 70 cents. Food Giant every day, doubles up to 50 cents. But Fred's, I found out, also price matches. So, and I specifically asked the cashier when I was in there this last weekend, so if an item is on sale at Walmart or Rouse's or Kroger or a grocery store or dollar store or any place else, if an item is on sale there, you will match the price, and then if I have a coupon, you will take it off that sale price? And she said yes. So that simplified things so much because now I don't have to go to five different stores to use a coupon.
And spend your savings on gas.
I can every Sunday or Wednesday, respectively, I can go through my ads. I can say... I can find everything that's on sale at any store that I have a coupon for. So if I have a coupon for it and I need it, that item, and it's, I can find wherever it's on sale, I can make a note of it, and then I can go in with my page full of notes as to what's on sale where and that I have a coupon for. I can find everything I need in less than half an hour in Fred's, go up to the front, hand them my sheet of paper, and they can price match all the different items down to their sale prices at the other store. Then I hand them my coupons, and they'll take the coupon amount. They'll double it up to 70 cents as long as I go there on a Saturday, and I'll get the sale price of the item. And I can take advantage of sales at every store because Fred's price matches. So that's what I'm going to do, and if it's like a grocery item that Fred's doesn't have, then I can go to Food Giant and they'll double up to 50 cents. And they also price match. So at Rouse's, if they have Planner's nuts, mm-hmm. you know, or some food item that Fred's doesn't have, I can go to Food Giant and get it up to 50 cents, the value of the coupon. So I'll try Fred's first, and whatever Fred's doesn't have, I'll go to Food Giant. Because Fred's gives a little more in the double coupons, mm-hmm. but there's very few coupons between 51 cents and 70 cents. Most coupons are 50 cents or 75 cents, which is why Fred's only doubles up to 70 cents. Because if they went up to 75 cents, there'd be a whole nother slew of coupons that they'd have to accept and double.
So you're double tapping Fred's pretty much.
Yes. Right? I'm triple tapping them because I'm getting the item on sale and then they're doubling the coupon.
Yeah.
So, like you said earlier, if it's a, you know, an item that's on sale $2 for $3, mm-hmm. like a Ziploc bags $2 for $3, then I get the item for $1.50 because it's on sale at, say, Walgreens. I go to Fred's, get it on sale for $1.50. I have a 50-cent coupon. They'll double that coupon $1, and then I'll pay 50 cents for a bag of or a box of Ziploc bags.
When you make your sweetest transaction one time, yes. and you end up running off with something that is normally like $5, but it ends up costing you a quarter.
Yes.
You should just light it on fire in front of the cashier. Just be like, because I can.
No, see, I don't want to get banned from Fred's though, because they are now they are now my retail.
Until you put them out of business, as I said.
They're now my retail location of choice. But anyway, I thought I would share that with the proletariat. Maybe somebody will follow my lead and go down the merry trail of savings.
I'm a cheap bastard, and I like that. That speaks to my cheap bastardness. Mm-hmm. But the time commitment is I don't have that time. Like, well, how much time does it take you to go through the coupons and
it doesn't take me very long on Sunday. What I do is I cut out. I get my. There's normally two.
You like stack it during
There's normally two books of coupons in the Sunday paper. There's like the Red Plum and the Super Saver or mm-hmm. some sort of other one. And what I do is I go through and I cut out every coupon.
Okay.
Every coupon. And then I go through those items and I say, okay, what will I not use? Mm-hmm. And if it's like a baby item, I'll put it in an envelope and give it to my brother. If it's a girl item, pass that on as well. But if it's just shit I know I'm not going to eat, like yogurt, and I don't think anybody else wants it, I'll throw those out, but after I cut it.
Because Greek yogurt? Send it this way, my friend.
Okay. So then I have the coupons from that week that I know I will use. And then I file those in my coupon binder. And then that'll take probably 45 minutes. And then it'll take me an hour to go through the other circulars and find what I have coupons for and what's on sale somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So safely 2 hours?
So 2 hours.
2 hours?
Yeah.
And how much do you save? Have you saved at like?
I've saved about, I mean,
one day.
Well, I don't buy tons of shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I'll buy like 6 or 7 items because mm-hmm. I'm not going in there, you know, I live alone and I'm not going to buy something just because I have a coupon for it. So I'll only buy like 6 or 7 items, but I'll save about 50%.
That's pretty good. I'm just trying to break it down to like a per hour thing. Like, is your time worth, you know, $30 in coupons that you might sprinkle throughout a month?
Well, considering that time, you know, is on Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. it's not like I'm losing out on something else.
Yeah, you know, you're ignoring your brain surgery.
Yeah, I'm not calling in to work because I want to clip coupons. You know,
when you have a problem.
I would probably be watching TV or something in the meantime if I wasn't clipping coupons. So, cool. You know, I think I went to Fred's on Saturday, and instead of my bill being like $18, it was like eight something.
That's respectable. Yeah. That's good. See, I would feel compelled to buy shit that I wouldn't normally otherwise. Have you
encountered that? It's hard, but you just have to say, okay, yeah, I like cinnamon rolls, but the generic is still $1.50 and Pillsbury's $3.
Yeah, it's just as sweet. It's
and with the coupons and everything, it's, you know, $1.75 for Pillsbury and the generic's still $1.50, so I'm still gonna buy the generic. You know?
Right, right.
Now the temptation is to say spend the extra 50 cents and get the Pillsbury. But you do that 4 or 5 times throughout your shopping trip on items, and then you've spent another $5 that you didn't really want to spend. Mm-hmm. And for people like you and me, $5 is $5, you know?
That's a BJ at the back of the Lowe's or Home Depot, depending.
That's it. But, so I thought I'd share that with the proletariat. And also, this week I had an audition for my first nude role.
No.
Yes, sirree.
Tell.
Yes, sirree. I got a call from my agent, and he was like, I've got this role, and I remember one time you telling me that you would be willing to do nudity. Can I submit you for it? And I said, yeah, go ahead and submit me. And he called me back the next day and said, okay, I submitted you, and
they want to see you.
They
naked.
Want to see you.
Okay, so you got the sides.
I got the sides.
What were you met with when you got the sides? Like, what kind of film?
Yeah, this is a really, you'll really appreciate this from a performer, like a legitimate performer background. Because some people that call themselves actors, they get their sides and they say, okay, this guy is mad.
He's angry.
I'm going to go in there and I'm going to say these lines.
Madly. Yeah.
But you and I take the craft a little more seriously. Well, this was one of the harder auditions I've ever had as far as first audition, not a callback or anything. Mm-hmm. Because A, there were no lines. It's just
That's
a description.
Tough. Always.
Just a description in the thing that says, basically, and, you know, I'm using my own words, of course, here, but this businessman, important-looking fellow, is nailing this girl in, like, a public park, and Mark Wahlberg's character, who's a private investigator, comes up, starts taking pictures. The guy who's nailing the chick sees him, and then improv. And I was like,
dude.
Okay, so I'm nailing this chick in a park. I see someone taking pictures of me. I stop nailing her and go confront him. Do I still have my pants on or my pants around my ankles at this point? Am I going to fight him? And do you want some discussion? Do you want some, you know, verbiage? Mm-hmm. Do you just want me to walk up and punch him? Do you want me to yell? Do you want me to stay with her? Like, can I have something? And she's like, just do whatever you want. And I'm like, okay, well, my first inclination would be to pull up my fucking pants. My second one would be to tell the girl to get moving. My third would be to go over there and punch him in the face and break his camera. Mm-hmm. In that order.
Yeah.
So that's what I tried to do. There's not a lot of, I mean, it's all physical. You know, there's not a lot of.
Did you throw some lines in there? Like,
yeah, I mean, I was like,
you buddy, or?
I was like, hey, what the fuck are you doing? You know, put your clothes on, meet me at the car, push the girl like out of the way, you know, pull my pants up, walk over there, shove him. Hey, what the fuck is your problem? What are you doing here? You know? And then start punching. Like, that was, you know, my motivation was to fucking get the film out of this camera, because if I'm the, you know, if I'm an important dude, I don't want pictures of me nailing a bitch in a park.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it was very, very, very strange audition because, I mean, I'm trying to think, okay, I'm naked at this point. And you don't carry yourself the same naked as you do fucking clothes.
It depends on how important you are or how important you think you are.
Right.
So how do they establish that this is an important guy if he's naked? It was like, you know, blazer, jackets,
yeah, I guess he's
pantsless,
you know, or pants down. Or I don't know how they're going to set it up. You know, it could be the scene before, you know, he's going over a dossier of, you know, with my fucking headshot in the corner, you know, like that old movie file where you open it up and it's right. got a bunch of papers with a paperclip on it. And the first page is always like a mugshot or a fucking 8x10 glossy of some dude walking out of a office building.
Right.
Taken from across the street.
Or his ass looking over his shoulder.
Right.
So how was it set up? I mean, did they say, take your pants off and do the scene? Or like, hey, can we see your ass?
I'm not going to lie. I had done some manscaping.
Okay.
And
well, you're an important businessman.
Yes, but nudity was not required in the audition. I was prepared. I was prepared. Okay. But I was ready
they didn't
to
ask for it?
I was ready to drop trowel. But,
okay. But, so the agent just said, this role would require nudity.
Yeah, it was clear that you so would be pantsless on
walk in
set.
There with your dick out and be like, I'm ready. How are you doing? Yeah. Hi, Jonathan Bell.
I thought about it. She didn't ask, so I wasn't going to be like, so you want to see my cock right now? Or
I nared my butt.
When I was leaving, she was like,
got a coupon for it.
She was like, it's crazy being an actor, huh? And
that's a nice little.
I was like, yeah.
Thing.
But it's weird because she liked what I did apparently, but apparently that scene got cut because I know the female that would have been playing. She's in my agency, and she had already been booked for that scene, so they were looking for the male counterpart, and I just thought I didn't get it because I didn't hear anything in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to shoot last Friday. Mm-hmm. The audition was last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So Friday came around and I was like, okay, I guess I didn't get the part. And then my agent said, well, they didn't even call her in for that scene and that's her part. So,
yeah. Well, it could have been totally rescheduled as these things go. Or just cut.
Yeah. I'm assuming it was cut. Because Marky Mark was probably like, yeah, I'm not real wild about a naked dude rolling all over me. But that was the second part. That was the more humorous, comedic part of the whole experience was I was going to be rolling around with Marky Mark on the ground.
Potentially pants around your ankles.
With my pants around my ankles.
Oh, God.
I'm like, I'm living every female's dream right now, and I'm fucking hating every second of it.
Oh, I would have made the most of that. You know you would have loved that.
It would have been a great fucking story, but I'm just glad I have the story to tell that I went on the audition, you know? And I don't feel bad about my performance or whatever because the scene got cut, so.
Well, speaking of things that are cut.
Yeah.
You brought to my attention one of the last times we got together that the Texas Killing Fields was going straight to DVD due to poor performance in a couple of theaters in Los Angeles area. Did we talk about that briefly on the
We did pod? Not mention it at all. We've talked about the film before. We have not talked about it being straight to video.
This is the Texas Killing Fields with I wish I knew their names. The Avatar guy
and Sam Worthington and Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Oh, you're on it.
Yes.
with those fellas. So, you know, not nobodies by any measure. And gritty, real cop drama based on true events is the whole premise for it. Takes place in Texas, thus Texas Killing Fields. Originally named The Killing Fields, but got elongated to The Texas Killing Fields. So once you told me it was out, in some form, I came home and I scoured the interwebs and found a torrent for it.
Okay.
And I downloaded it.
Mm.
And then I sat on it for about 4 or 5 days till I felt I was in a good space to totally be soul crushed.
Okay.
Put it on with the Mrs. We started watching it. As far as the movie building up, it's...
I'm really anxious to hear where this goes.
Okay, the movie, the tone and the feel of the movie, being gritty, there was some, like, kind of really disturbing home invasion scene that was, like, really underplayed, and I think that worked really well, you know, in all the splatter films and over hyper-violent stuff just, like, loses its tangibility.
Sure.
Because it's so, you know, spectacular. So it had some good things going for it like that, but it was kind of confusing as, like, why some ancillary characters were in there and why we're supposed to care about them. And, like, it's showing them too much, and they're not doing so much as far as progressing the plot of the film that you know they're going to be a pawn in the story later on. They're just establishing them.
Sure.
Anyway, felt my scene coming up because of the action in it, and the action in my scene's like, oh, here it is.
Yes. Yes.
Lean in. And out of my probably 35 words in dialogue spread over a page and a half.
Sure.
It was boiled down to one word.
Okay.
And it was the character's name, Bryant. And a gesture of me gesturing him to follow me out of a door from inside the crime lab. The whole glorious walk down the hallway in the police station with Jeffrey Dean Morgan did not make it.
Okay.
And that was, I wanted that, like, side-by-side star power. Be like, hey, you're that guy that did that thing.
Yep.
So you see kind of my silhouette come into the, the crime lab, because it's a crime lab. It's fucking dark. And you see me in the call center under lighting. I open the door for him. He walks past me. And I really didn't like what I saw from myself.
Okay.
And then I went on a rant blaming them having me a call time for 8 a.m. and not prepping me to film until 9 p.m. and me being in a closet, basically, with a toilet and a place to kind of lay down as long as you bend your knees for about 12 fucking hours.
Yeah.
So I went through different levels of anxiety and adrenaline rush and, like, oh boy, I knew the fucking lines, you know, yesterday.
Yeah.
Not even trying to think about it, but now I'm thinking about them and they're just turning to soup in my brain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why am I such a retarded person? Why do I hate myself and any chance of success?
Yes.
And then I get to do that for 12 hours.
Yes.
You know, if it would just be like, all right, you're here at 8. Okay, 15 minutes. Come over here and have a cup of coffee, and we're just going to start going at it.
Yeah.
Or.
Yeah, but you've been in the film industry long enough. You know that's not how it works.
Yeah, but I'm not conditioned yet. I haven't done that so much that that kind of. Put your dick in your hand for 12 hours, I can just deal with, you know? I'm still dealing with it. And every lesson is hard because it's isolated by time. If I was doing that, like, every week or every 3 days, I'd be like, oh, no problem. I'll just continue War and Peace. And I'll be able to quiet that little crazy squirrel in my head that's chewing my brain up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's just like stand-up. It's hard if I only, if I go, like, 4 or 5 months, three or four months in between a gig. Like, it's hard to get back on the saddle and have that comfort level that I feel I need, you know? Because I know I can make people laugh. I know I can hold an audience for half an hour.
Yeah.
But I want to be good. I want people to be walking out being like, that was the fucking best live comedy show I've ever seen.
Yeah, you know? That's the worst thing that can happen is, you know, your hopes for what it can be get in the way of you just doing what needs to be done at the time.
Sure.
You know, people that listen to this might be engineers or doctors or in the military, and we're sitting here pissing in our panties about, like, how tough it is to be an actor.
Sure.
But it's relative. I mean, there is that, you know, you're trying to do this thing, and turn this screw, you fix the problem, you know?
Absolutely. And there's also a judgment of actors. Like, somebody doesn't walk up to, you know, a doctor and be like, man, the way you're treating that patient is fucking horrendous.
Let's get that other MD in here. But you're not going to work out.
You know, a casting director will straight up tell you, you're terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or, hey, you're a little fat for what we were looking for in this role.
Or even if the grip just rolls his eyes or something like that. It's not even you, but you're in just such a hyper critical state.
Yeah.
To try to do it.
And the thing is, we don't know. Like, your story of the Texas killing fields reminded me so much of my experience with Jonah Hex. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't wait for 12 hours, but I waited for probably 5 or 6 hours. And, you know, it really broke my heart because it was like I had this face-off with Josh Brolin and fucking stared him down, and we were literally like 4 inches from each other's face. And I had a stare down with an Oscar-winning actor. And it was like cameras, you know, on all sides and multiple angles and numerous times. And so it can be intimidating, fucking literally in the face of an Oscar-winning actor and having to hold your own.
Never mind the 18 people around you sure, all focused on what you're doing.
But holding your own in that situation. And I did a kick-ass job of it. And the way the final cut happened, you couldn't even tell. I mean, it was over the shoulder stuff, so mm-hmm. you couldn't tell. I mean, you could tell he was in front of me, but it didn't show chops on my end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they cut the one line I had. So I didn't get the line, and I didn't get the face off. I mean, you can see me for fucking maybe a second. And then you got a nice slow pan of the back of my head.
I got maybe another second on you. Yeah. In a word.
Yeah.
But
that word's important.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I was expecting to be just jettisoned from the whole film.
Yeah.
I was like, they have CG'd in somebody else. That's like how negative on myself I was going into it. So on that side, you know, I actually was somewhat pleasantly surprised.
Right.
But at the same time, I was like, really? And then like what I saw of myself, I hated because
sure,
know, that self-loathing.
Right.
But I mean, it probably wasn't that bad. And then I promptly turned it off and we didn't watch the rest of the film.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, check it out. Texas Killing Fields.
Texas Killing Fields. I will definitely check it out.
Up to about 28 minutes and 40 seconds.
Whenever you make me a copy.
Sure.
All right, well, let's take a break. I know it's about that time, and we'll be right back, folks.
There you go.
We got a girl gone missing over here. We just located the car. It's in the fields.
She is in the fields. She's as good as gone.
Brian, Texas City Police Department. We got a homicide of our own over here.
One more big girl.
Blonde.
Dark hair.
This is us. Texas City. Fields.
It's not our jurisdiction. All along those bayous, our local people won't go in there. It's infected or something.
Hey, princess!
Get in.
Can't you just go home and watch TV like other kids?
I'm gonna ask you a couple questions.
See this girl?
Which one of you found the hand?
You wouldn't mind telling me about the guy with the green Pontiac.
Why would he kill her after he murdered somebody cut into him?
I'd assume to send a message.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to this, our second act.
That would be the second half as well.
Halftime.
Because there are two acts.
Yeah.
With a brief intermission.
Yeah. We have no third act. We have no resolution.
That's true. Yeah. Our third act is going to the website and
there you go.
Clicking around as people should do.
Click on Amazon forum.
Right. We have not asked people to join our forum in the past several weeks. So if you're new to the aristocracy, new to the proletariat, please join our forums and kick around in there. There's some good stuff and you can meet some other nerds and interact and some good peoples in the forum.
Get in there. Start trolling. I don't care, man. Just make it active.
Do what you got to do.
Get out of hand. We'll let you know.
So, what you got for us this week?
I wish I had something cheery to talk about. I just checked the little Google news before we started, and there's another shooting at Virginia Tech, which is just like, what the fuck is on their syllabus that is inspiring this? And it's like, isn't it near the anniversary of like that fucking massacre?
Yeah. It's a cop was killed today.
Yeah.
But,
and then they found a body. They think it's a shooter.
I don't know. I don't know what the problem is. I don't know if it's something in the water, if it's just that gun culture, you know, where it's like everybody was raised with a gun and gun in the back of the truck, you know, hanging out behind the windshield. And
yeah, I know there's crazy people, but I mean, come on, like be like, all right, well, I'll go shoot a cop at the bank because this place has a history with that. And that's just bad form.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. But people who were raised around guns you know, respect them, I guess you could say, to some degree.
You would think, but I mean, I'm sure intelligence has a lot to do with that. So,
what was that word again?
Intelligence. You know, I mean, you can be raised around guns and be familiar with them, but if you're a moron, you're going to be a moron with gun knowledge as opposed to just a standard moron.
Right.
You know, it's at the end of the day, you're still stupid. But it's sad. Our thoughts are with them.
That's developing, so we don't know much more than that. I just noticed, and I was like, holy fuck, what the hell? I know there's something going through Senate and Congress right now about putting restrictions on the internet, being able to give content providers a virtual kill switch. Like if a website is showing some of their copyrighted or intellectual property,
right,
they can put the gears in motion to where that entire site can just be shut down.
Sure.
Because it's having copyright material on it.
Yeah.
That's not a good thing. That's an overreactionary kind of method to take from content providers. They should be able to protect their property. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying this as someone who, you know, shares media frequently with peers of mine.
Yes.
I know them personally.
Yes, of course.
Mm-hmm. Most of them are Swedish. It's weird. But just being able to break the internet is not a good thing. That's like an old man, like, oh, just shut it off.
Yeah.
Like, no, it doesn't work like that, Grandpa. It's a web, you know? Literally very interconnected. You can't just take out a chunk of it and, oh, it's going to be fine. Plus, you don't want to put that kind of precedent in there because that's what they're doing in Syria and all those places.
Yeah, there's a lot of police state kind of things going on here lately with the internet and the expansion of the Patriot Act. And, you know, now they're passing that law to where it does away with due process.
Do what now? Really?
This week, Congress passed a law or passed a resolution that says for terror suspects, they can hold them indefinitely. They don't have a right to habeas corpus. And these are American citizens. This isn't foreign citizens. This new law is saying that American citizens suspected of terrorist activity can be held without habeas corpus and without due process, like indefinitely. And the ACLU is blowing up about it. NPR is blowing up, Daily Show, Colbert Report, all the standard sources, you know, coast to coast, all those places are saying, hey, that's not really constitutional, but only 7 members of our Congress voted against it because everybody is so fucking afraid of coming out, you know, of a campaign commercial saying they're for terror.
Yeah.
Or their
Senator John Blah helping, supports Arabs trying to kill you.
Ryan Reinecke helps terrorists. You know,
it's I don't want that publicly known.
Right? So it's
yeah, fear is a
it's headed to the president's desk. I don't know if he'll sign it or not, but it's fucking scary, man.
Well, I worry about that. Sure, that's terrible, but even beyond that, that's just kind of like I see a future bucket that you can flute the edges of, like a fancy champagne glass. So it's not so restrictive, like, yes, we have definitive shit that you are involved with foreign nationals trying to, you know, bring down the country. Or you have a bunch of guns in your bunker and you want to overthrow the country.
Right.
To just like, well, you kind of did something that we can kind of put through this one lens to then fall in this bucket.
Sure.
By way of our fluted ramp.
And that's the problem, is the language is so broad. I mean, how do you describe, you know, terrorist? Because you also got domestic terrorism. I'm not talking about helping Al-Qaeda, you know, fucking...
Anywhere from extremist teabaggers to extremist Wall Street protesters.
Yeah.
It's a wide swath.
Yeah.
And it's fear. And the fear with the the stop online piracy, STOP or whatever, not Stone Temple Pilots. And it's just like this, you know, shotgun blast to try to kill a cricket kind of mentality of laws. And that's just not a good way to go.
But what's crazy is like people will whenever I start talking about it, people will kind of take that approach to me like I'm just a conspiracy theorist or some nut. And I have to explain to them, look back over history. Like, the Nazis didn't come to power overnight and say, we want to kill all the Jews. It was a very gradual process. It was like, we're going to restrict this, just this little right you have right here. We're going to, and the next, it's going to, we're going to expand this law a little bit here. And then 2 years later, well, we think these people should be able to be held without without justification.
Yeah. And then you look around and it's like, how did this happen all of a sudden?
Yeah, then 10 years later, you're like, okay, now they're burning people in ovens. How the fuck did we come to this? And yeah, if it would have happened on Tuesday to Wednesday, it'd have been a big fucking deal. But you spread it out over 10 years and you can gradually punch people in the balls enough to where at the end of the 10 years, they're curled up on the floor. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they don't really know how they got there. And that's fucking scary. It really is. It really is.
We need to end ball punching in this country.
Which reminds me of in a report I heard on NPR today, and I thought it was very telling psychologically, and I found it very interesting. Basically, a group of experts looked back at clashes with police over the last 40 years. And what they found was almost 100% conclusive or encompassing was when police dress in riot gear or threatening equipment and or gear, there's almost always, in every instance they looked at, a physical and or violent confrontation. When the police dress in standard blue uniforms without the shields and the masks and the helmets and the tear gas canisters and the sticks and the, you know, blah, 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 then there's almost never an instance of violence with regards to protests or demonstrations or blah, blah, blah. And this is including, you know, WTO protests, World Health Organization protests, NAFTA, NATO, you know.
That's interesting. I mean, it's interesting. And very understandable too. If you know anything about the Stanford Prison Experiment, where a professor in, I think, sociology or something like that, got a bunch of students to basically volunteer for a program where some would be prisoners and some would be cops, and they dressed accordingly, and all the prisoners were stripped of their names and they were just identified by numbers. Mm-hmm. First couple of days, it was just students telling students where to sit and stuff. But by the end of the week, they were like subjecting them to Abu Ghraib kind of experiments of, like, you know, prone positions and stressing them and sleep deprivation and dunking their heads in water. And one of the main things that the professor did, which I thought was interesting, is he made all the quote unquote cop students wear mirrored sunglasses. And he was like, this gives them a mask.
That anonymity.
Yeah. They cannot be contacted directly in the eye. And a similar thing could go for all that gear. Is the cops are dressed for that, and they're just like, they get high on that uniform.
Yeah.
And then the protesters see that too, and they're expecting the cops to go ape. So right. They're kind of positioning themselves to respond against that eventuality, and it just comes to a head. And, you know, next thing you know, you have tear gases fucking flying in people's stomachs and shit.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. I don't know. There was another story about the police that I found interesting. This actually came out probably 3 weeks ago, but I haven't been able to. It's just been one of those stories that I have written down on every podcast sheet to talk about, but never get around to it. But
well, that's all the time we have for this week.
Right. But TV pitchman Don LaPree was found dead in his cell of an apparent suicide in Arizona. And like I say, he was in police custody. He had been charged with 41 counts of conspiracy, mail fraud, wire fraud, and promotional money laundering with his company, The Greatest Vitamin in the World. Now, I used to do an impression. What caught my eye to the story was I used to do an impression of him when I first started doing comedy, like 18 years old in Las Vegas. I did an impression of him in my act, and then everybody knew him because he was on TV at the time, mm-hmm. you know, but he's like, I can't do it anymore, but it's, and I got to talk loud, but it's like, have you ever wanted to be so rich, but you didn't know how to get there? I'm Don LaPree, and I'm going to show you. You know what I mean? Like, it was, he was that guy.
Show me. Show me.
He was that guy.
Sadly enough, I don't recognize it from his picture on Google, but right. I recognize it from that cadence.
Yes.
sucks for him, I guess. Ill-gotten gains, huh?
Yeah.
That's a little cosmic justice in some weird way.
It was. It really made me think, because the psychology of being known as the millionaire, like, would mean I could have predicted his suicide, because he's known as the guy, you know, from the TV and pitching this $1 million, how to be a millionaire kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. If you ever fell on hard times and you weren't, then everybody in your life would think you're a fucking fraud. You know, I mean, if you're known as Ryan the actor, and you went 20 years without doing so much as a fucking play, then people would, if you referred to yourself as an actor, people would be like, yeah, an actor.
What have you been lately?
Yeah, okay, Mr. Actor Pants. You know what I mean? And that's how he must have been with money. Uh-huh. Like, if he didn't have the fancy cars in the mansion or stuff like that anymore, he's, you know, a fucking wannabe. He's a sham. He's a fraud.
So he had a lot of money, then he lost it, or like,
apparently, I mean, it says it was only a few days before his $52 million fraud trial was set to begin.
Oh wow!
So I don't know if he was embezzling from his own company or what. It just says the 47-year-old had been charged with 41 counts of conspiracy, mail fraud, wire fraud, and promotional money laundering with his company, The Greatest Vitamin in the World.
Yeah, he just ripped off a lot of fucking people, and they must have put a class action suit together or something like that. What a pussy.
But yeah, he was the one you grew up with late at night, you know. I started in a tiny one-bedroom apartment, and now, look at all this wealth.
Wide shot, bitches coming, you know, in with champagne on trays.
Yeah, he would say he would beat the tiny one-bedroom apartment thing to death. He's like, I started this company in a tiny one-bedroom apartment with a wife and two kids. But, yeah.
He had a wife and two kids?
I believe he did. That's terrible. At one point.
But I started my life as shitty as yours is right now, yes, basically exactly. Saying.
That's basically what
you're saying. Yeah, when you're 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, counting your dead ends in life, stuff like that can actually sound kind of good.
Yeah.
You know, like the exercise commercials at 3 o'clock in the morning. Oh, yeah. I can, you know, roll that under my couch. It's awesome.
Right.
That'll get me right in shape.
Well, did you want to do a couple of standard weekly topics or weekly segments, and then we can wrap it up?
Sure, what you got?
All right. This week in nerd history, we'll go ahead and do the RIP to John Lennon, who passed away this week after being murdered. So there you go.
20 years ago or something, huh?
Yeah, 1980 he was killed. So,
goddamn.
What, 31 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, 31 years ago this week, John Lennon shot and killed. But, hey, man, still got those fans every year.
Yeah, imagine there's no Yoko.
Every year on December 8th, it's John Lennon all over the news, even like CNN and headline news.
Now, how do you think he would have progressed? Do you think it was good that he cashed out early, kind of like a James Dean thing? Do you think he would have?
You know what? I'm the wrong person to ask, because I've just never been a Beatles dude. I've never been a Beatles guy.
Why not?
Just never thought they were as good as everybody gave them credit for. I mean, I can look at them in a historical context and be like, yeah, they were the first, like, you know, uber famous mega rock and roll band. But musically, I don't think they deserve a lot of the credit that they're given. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't pioneers in any way. They stole a lot from the black music going on at the time.
Yeah.
As Elvis did, and fucking Roy Orbison, and Johnny Cash, and yeah. Zeppelin, and the rest of them, you know?
Well, it might do you good to revisit them again. Because I kind of had an against them kind of feeling because of the fans of them.
Right.
You know, the fans of Something Killing It kind sure. of thing is just yeah. like, I hate you so much, whatever you like, I hate.
Right.
You know, the friend of my enemy is my enemy, I guess. And then I got a time in my life where I was away from those people, and I was like, yeah, you know, let me check out some more of the random stuff, you know, not the I Want to Hold Your Hand stuff.
Right.
Like, okay, and then, yeah, you know, re-put it into the context of the times and stuff like that, and, you know, some just really beautiful songs. I mean, granted, you know, like any band, they have some good ones, and then they have some that you can just skip through.
Right.
But, yeah, I recommend turning out the Beatles again.
I will give it a shot. We'll do a nerd fact segment.
Nerd facts.
The New York Giants and Jets, both football teams, were offered and declined $25 million for the naming rights to their new stadium by the dating website AshleyMadison.com, which targets adulterers.
What?
Yeah. $25 million to name the stadium AshleyMadison.com Arena or whatever. Which targets adulterers. I know Ashley Madison from the commercials they play late at night where it's like, these two people are married.
No way. This is a thing?
But not to each other.
This is a real thing?
This is a real thing. AshleyMadison.com. And what's crazy is this website, which targets adulterers.
Oh, man. It's, you know, it's a
dating. It's, wow. But anyway, yeah, AshleyMadison.com, which is basically a dating website for people that are married and not swingers. They just want to cheat on their significant other. Apparently, they're doing so good, they have $25 million to offer.
Now, they couldn't have thought that this would be legitimately taken by these, you know, football teams. They're just doing it for the press, right?
Dude, nothing would surprise me anymore.
And so by that virtue, they don't have to have $25 million. They just have to get in the news. And then now I'm going to give them a page click by going to their site and seeing what dudes I can
Well, you better have your – you better let your wife listen to this episode, because if she goes through your history and sees AshleyMadison.com on your history bar, she's going to be like, hey, WTF.
Oh, I scrub this thing every 5 minutes.
Husband.
It's research, I swear, God.
But, yeah, how about that? AshleyMadison.com, $25 million. Their offer to name the New York Giants and Jets new stadium. And the offer was declined. So, there you have it.
It takes single people, too.
We'll do some... A couple of weeks ago, I was eating lunch and picked up a copy of the Coffee News.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if there's Coffee News all over the country, but it's basically just like a, you know, two-sheet newspaper that you get at restaurants and bars and coffee shops and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's got... Mm-hmm.
Your horoscope.
Yeah, horoscope and quotes and blah, 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 happenings in the communities, and it's free, and they have advertisements on the side of it. Anyway, they always ask 5 trivia questions.
Mm.
And typically, being the trivia nerd I am, a lot of them are obscure and not really intelligence-based, just fucking obscure,
random,
meaningful crap. But I normally get about 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And this time was the first time ever I've gotten all 5. And I'm typically really good. You know, I was captain of the quiz bowl team in high school. I know my trivia. I'm not that guy that goes to trivia night at the bar fucking six nights a week. Mm-hmm. But in my day, I knew a lot of trivia. But it was the first time I had gotten all five. And I wanted to ask you these questions to see if it was just the fucking luck of the draw.
Well, this would be a good metric because I am fucking terrible at trivia.
Okay. Yeah, so I wanted to know if everyone and their mother knew these answers or if I could actually celebrate for the one time in my life I got 5 out of 5.
All right, let's find out.
Okay. Question number one. Mm-hmm. How thick is a hockey puck? Think
metric or?
No. Well, I'll take either one, but standard and or metric.
1.5 inches. No, 1.25 inches. 1.25.
Close. 1 inch. Okay.
It's hard to tell. They're black. They look thicker.
Question two. What company first sold the game Twister?
First sold, indicating that there's been a change of the intellectual property. Milton Bradley.
Yes, correct. See, I thought of two, Milton Bradley and Hasbro. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to guess Milton Bradley because I think Hasbro,
classic board game.
Hasbro, I think, came along in like the 70s or 80s. And I think Twister's been around since like the 50s.
Yeah, yeah. Hasbro might be the 60s.
Okay.
Late 60s.
So that's good. What color is the light on the port side of a boat?
Green.
No.
Fuck.
Red.
Taking the stern.
Okay. and for me, I had no clue. I had never seen any other light on a boat other than red. Mm-hmm. So I said red.
And that's see, I was thinking red was a red herring.
Right.
Fuck. Okay. Because I know I've seen green on boats too.
Okay. And what year did the Berlin Wall come down?
1986?
No.
Fuck.
1989.
What? Really?
Yes.
God damn.
And which artist painted the Mona Lisa? Really?
Hold on. Mark Wahlberg.
That is correct.
Da Vinci, right?
Yes.
Okay, god damn it. Yeah, all right, thanks.
Okay, so...
Told you, terrible. Even my terribleness, I got two.
Well, you and I both guessed... on the red. I didn't know about green. I got lucky on that one. Milton Bradley, we both got. You're only off by 1/4 inch on the hockey puck.
It's still off. Wrong.
But I'm going to go ahead and say I was surprised that you didn't get 1989. I thought you would have gotten that one.
Why?
Because of your Russian heritage.
German.
No, you're Russian.
My people froze.
Yeah.
Actually, there's an island off the coast.
No,
of
I knew you were German. I just thought that you would.
It's insulting, man. It's like calling an Irishman English or something
like
that.
Well, I'm German too, so.
I know. That's.
I'm with you.
That's where we can call each other krauts when we're down, you know, being our homies together, and we're not insulted. But if somebody else calls us a kraut, it's like a big racial thing.
Goddamn right. We will end on a nerd quote. Now this is more of a little anecdote than a quote, but it does include a quote, so I thought you would enjoy it as our nerd quote this week.
All right,
Miles Davis says Miles Davis was a man of few words. When he did speak, his words often had a similar effect to a hand grenade being lobbed into the room. In 1987, he was invited to a White House dinner by then-President Ronald Reagan. Few of the guests appeared to know who he was. During dinner, Nancy Reagan turned to him and asked what he'd done with his life to merit an invitation, because she didn't know who he was. Straight face, Miles Davis replied, "Well, I've changed the course of music 5 or 6 times. What have you done except fuck the president?"
No. Really?
Yes. Yes, Miles Davis.
Is it documented?
Miles Davis was not invited back to the White House
Holy
after that.
Oh, God.
But yes.
Oh, man. He is like, shot up on my personal star.
Right? I was like, how about that, Miles Davis, you fucking pimp? Anyway, so that's the show. What are you nerding on?
I am nerding on some How It's Made on
yes,
Netflix.
You are. Yes, you are, my friend.
Can I tell you about that?
No, but...
I opened the can of that for my kid's little brain, and we can both sit there, and it's not some annoying cartoon, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember the hockey one, you know, where they're making the hockey costume or uniform, whatever, and the gloves, and articulated, and oh, yeah, this is the one where they make the candy. Oh, you'll like this. It's candy. And it's great, man. At the beginning, it's like the Science Channel. What was that on? Was that on, like, Discovery Channel for a part of the day, like VH1 and Comedy Central back in the day or something?
I think it's just Discovery Channel.
Right, but it's tagged at the beginning of, like, the Science Channel, as though at one time the Science Channel was turned into from Discovery Channel for hours on the clock. Anyway, it's great stuff. I recommend it. Great, just... educational, sit back and let your brain just marvel at how great man is to make these machines that then make these products that you just can dismiss and take for granted.
Absolutely.
How It's Made, yo.
That's it.
What you nerding on?
The same old stuff, man. I think I'm going to jump ship on Breaking Bad. I'm sorry. It's just, to be honest, man, it's too fucking depressing. It's like, I've been waiting for some sort of plot element to be positive, and all it is, I'm on episode like 6 or 7 now, and all it's been is nothing but fucking depressing bullshit. And I don't watch film or television or whatever to be depressed. Mm-hmm. And it brings me down every time I watch it. And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's good acting, I'll give them that, but it doesn't make me happy when I watch it. It doesn't entertain me because I'm just like, this is nothing but fucking sad, dramatic fucking bullshit. And there's never any fun, positive element.
There's some little moments of camaraderie in there between the two main characters. I mean, where are you at now? They got the guy in the basement that they're going to kill?
No, I'm past that. Okay. I think I'm at the episode after it came out. That the episode I just watched was he went to a party and his friend offered him a job because his wife went to the friend and said, hey, we need insurance. So that's the episode I just finished. And it's nothing but fucking sad shit. And I'm just not interested in watching any more of it.
I'm sorry to hear you say that.
Yeah.
You're not mature enough for it.
No, I get it. I'm on the wagon as far as understanding and getting it and respecting the script writing and the, the acting, but it's just the narrative is too fucking depressing for me to keep watching.
But you're supposed to learn
enough
about yourself.
I've
from
got
these
enough
things.
Depression and sad shit going on in my life. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spend an hour watching a fucking fictional narrative that's fucking sadder than my real life.
Exactly. It'll distract you from your sad life.
No, it will not. It will just make me fucking sad.
It teaches you things about yourself, you know? Where am I too proud of my life to accept a handout?
Yeah,
you know, where are those times I didn't compromise? What would I do? You know, how far would I go? It's the best thing since fucking Slice TV.
No, I'm
all right, I'll get you a DVD, Blu-ray. I'll get you the Blu-ray of fucking Barney for Christmas. You can watch that. You can be happy.
No, I can watch some Game of Thrones because there's elements in it that are not fucking depressing. If Game of Thrones was nothing but fucking the little kid, the blonde boy, fucking killing people, and there was
well, first season's depressing, dude. There's like this ominous thing that's going to happen and kick everybody's ass. There's this one guy that you think is so great and his head gets fucking chopped off. There's this little prick that you think will be killed because he just represents everything evil and entitled and he's the king.
there's characters, Tyrion Lannister, that fucking brighten the day up. There's cool fight scenes, blah, blah, blah. In Breaking Bad, it's nothing but fucking drug addicts and a dude dying of cancer. That's all there is. It's like Requiem for a Dream, the fucking series. And Requiem for a Dream, you watch once and you're like, holy shit, that was some fucking deep, heavy shit. I don't need to watch that again for another 5 years.
That's giving more credit to Requiem to a Dream than it deserves.
I don't think so, because Breaking Bad doesn't have Alan Burstyn. But anyway, we can agree to disagree on Breaking Bad. I know Amy J is going to be frustrated to hear that I'm giving it up, but my life is too depressing as it is. I don't need to be brought down by a fucking television show. Anyway, thanks for listening, folks. Hopefully, Ryan will pick out some happy music to end this episode on, and so everybody won't be sad thinking about the fucking depravity of Breaking Bad. So, anyway, have a good time, folks. Thanks for joining us. Episode 44 coming right around the corner, and hit us up.
We'll see you then, folks. Enjoy.